Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for July 2012. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. The warm, humid weather that we expected in our summers didn't arrive until the middle of June, so it is now time to think of meals that appeal to us on warm days. Many of us will eat more salads and sandwiches during the warm months, along with melons, honeydew, watermelon, and cantaloupe. Do you have any suggestions for hot weather eating? Please call the reading service and leave a message for me if you do. What will we do to win a prize? About 100 people spent almost all night outside a new Krispy Kreme donut shop in Indian Land, South Carolina, hoping to win free donuts for a year. Krispy Kreme had announced that the first 100 people in line for the 6 a.m. opening would receive free donuts. First in line were Troy Smith and Laura Eichen of Raleigh. They arrived about 10:30 p.m. the night before the opening, according to LaFia Watson of Krispy Kreme. For Smith and Eichen, the campout was nothing new. This is the fifth time they've arrived early for a Krispy Kreme grand opening. They told reporters that they donate the donuts to charity. As the first to arrive, they will get a dozen donuts a week for the next 52 weeks. June 16 was to be a surprise day for some Raleigh neighborhoods. Food Line employees unloaded 15 heaping shopping carts, rolling them up to people's front porches and ring doorbells. Unsuspecting residents will be asked to help themselves to 5 items out of the cart. The name of the neighborhood was kept secret, but doorbells are to begin ringing at 10 a.m. This Saturday morning stunt, dubbed Operation Grocery Drop, is the latest of several marketing campaigns launched to create buzz about the Food Line chain, which has been struggling in recent years. In January, Food Line's parent company, the Belgian conglomerate Delahaye's Group, announced they would close 126 underperforming stores, including one in Kerry. In March, Food Lion offered a double coupon promotion for 2 weeks in its Triangle stores. It was the first time that Food Lion offered double coupons in this highly competitive Triangle grocery market, where competitors routinely doubled the face value of coupons. Last year, the grocer cut prices on 6,000 items, reorganized shelves, added shopping carts, and additional staffing, and made efforts to improve customer service. Raleigh will be the first city to host the grocery giveaway, but retailer will do it again in other locations, said Christy Phillips-Brown, a company spokeswoman. In addition to free groceries, the residents will be given coupons for Food Lion's My Essential brand of products. Local charities will also benefit from the event, Phillips-Brown said. Food Lion has pledged to donate $20,000 to 3 local charities. The money will be divided among the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina, Operation Homefront North Carolina, and the SPCA of Wake County. We have mentioned many times that one way to reduce our food intake is to use smaller plates and make our portions smaller. The mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, made headlines recently suggesting the size of sugar-sweetened beverage be limited in size. Obesity rates have skyrocketed. A big reason is because many people underestimate their food intake, especially for soft drinks and many fried foods, according to research. We can't actually judge quantity in 3 ways. If people eat too much at one meal, they don't naturally compensate by eating less at the next meal. Menu labeling aims to help us figure out how much they eat, but consumers also need to know higher mathematics to try to help them figure out what part of a meal they should consume. The result? Labeling menus is not helping most of us eat fewer calories. That's why portion control should be considered as an aid to support consumers who are interested in or are maintaining a healthy weight. Restaurants use a form of portion control when they serve customers, but there's no consistency. For example, in one restaurant, a serving of soda might be 12-ounce glass, while in another they use a 20-ounce size. The real amounts vary according to the amount of ice in the glass. As for portions labeled small, medium, and large, one restaurant's small order of fries might be 3 ounces, while another is 7 ounces. Research has shown that people are generally satisfied with the smaller portion as when they are served larger portions. Far too many of us tend to eat whatever is on our plate long after we feel full. We're creatures who resent being told what we must do certain things, and while the actions in New York may make us think, but will the citizens of New York City accept the idea of portion size regulations? Unfortunately, most of us know when we're overeating, but we don't want to be told what we should or should not eat. On a recent issue of On the Table column that appears in the News and Observer on Wednesdays, Suzanne Havala-Hobbs discussed the problems we find when we're trying to keep up with changing guidelines on nutrition. She begins, "So what do you think is harder, calculating your income tax or figuring out how to eat to stay healthy? Most people say it's harder to understand how to eat well. That's according to survey results released in May by the International Food Information Council Foundation, a nonprofit food industry organization that publishes an annual report on consumers' attitudes about food and health. The survey includes input from more than 1,000 adults representative of the U.S. demographics. 3/4 of those surveyed said it was very difficult to make sense of diet and health news, in part because the recommendations seemed to be changing. In fact, that very issue was a primary reason that she began writing her column nearly 10 years ago. The majority of people say they think a lot about diet and exercise habits, but only 20% say their diets are very good, and about the same number say their diets are very poor. And even though they care about diet and health, the survey shows that taste and price are more important than nutrition in people's food choices. When faced with new information about diet and health, people tend to research the topic on their own or rely on trusted source before believing what they read or hear. The need for nutrition experts may be on the rise. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the jobs of nutrition and jobs for dietitians is expected to increase by 20% by the year 2020, a rate faster than the growth of most professions. Nutrition experts are in demand in schools, food companies, hospital, and other healthcare organizations to help in menu and program planning, product design, and diet counseling. This survey also reported that more than half of Americans are trying to lose weight, and most are unable to accurately assess their calorie needs. 2/3 of Americans consider themselves physically active, yet in reality, 77% don't meet the national guidelines for physical activity levels. When it comes to food labels, the expiration date and the nutrition facts are the most frequently read items. If you're having a hard time keeping up with what's best for you, you're not alone. There's a growth industry in helping people sort it all out. It's hard to miss that portion sizes have gotten larger in the past few years. Research shows that people unintentionally consume more calories when faced with larger portions. This can mean significant excess calorie intake, especially when eating high-calorie foods. Here are some tips that may help us avoid some common portion size pitfalls. When eating out, many restaurants serve more food than a person needs at one meal. Take control of the amount of food that ends up on your plate by splitting an entree with a friend. My wife and I do this often and just order a second salad. Or we can ask for a to-go box and put half the food on your plate in the box before you start eating. To reduce second and third helpings when eating at home, serve the food on individual plates instead of putting the serving dishes on the table. Practice portion control in front of the TV. When eating or snacking in front of the TV, put the amount you plan to eat in a bowl or container instead of eating straight from the package. It's easy to overeat when your attention is focused on something else. We learned as children not to snack before a meal for fear of spoiling our appetites. Well, it's time to forget that old rule. If you feel hungry between meals, eat a healthy snack like a piece of fruit or a small salad to avoid overeating during your next meal. For some reason, the larger the package, the more people consume from it without realizing it. To minimize this effect, divide up the contents of one large package into several smaller containers to help avoid overconsumption. Don't eat straight from the larger package. Instead, serve the food in a small bowl or container. Obeying the rules can sometimes be very difficult. Case in point, the pizza. Congress required menu labeling as a part of the health care reform law enacted in 2010, and the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, has been working on details ever since. The goal to combat obesity by helping consumers make informed choices when they eat out, especially now that one-third of the calories Americans consume comes from food prepared outside the home. Under the FDA's proposal, food chains with at least 20 locations, including sit-down restaurants, fast food outlets, bakeries, coffee shops, delis, and convenience stores, must disclose calorie on menus and menu boards. The American Pizza Community, created in January, says the rules as written are unfair. For starters, the FDA would require that a menu board display the calorie count for an entire pizza, even though the average consumer eats only 2.1 slices, the group said. The proposal calls for posting a calorie range for foods that can be customized, but such ranges are so wide for pizza they're useless, the pizza makers say. There are 34 million ways to customize it depending on the toppings and the crust and size, according to the number crunchers at Domino's. This is a message that some of the nation's largest pizza chains want to impress upon Capitol Hill lawmakers as they push for changes to a proposed menu labeling plan that would force chain restaurants and other food outlets to post the calorie count of foods they are selling. A group of pizza chains, including Domino's, Papa John's, Little Caesars, Godfather's Pizza, and Pizza Hut, argue that the government's plan forces store owners to pay for in-store menu boards that most of their customers don't see before ordering. The American Pizza Community, as this coalition is called, say 90% of their orders are placed online and over the phone. Then there's a problem of squeezing all the potential offerings into one menu board. A light bulb goes on when people hear about all the possible combinations for pizza, says Lynn Little, a Domino's executive and chair of this coalition. They start to realize how difficult it would be to take a one-size-fits-all approach. It would seem that pizza makers have made a point. How often do you serve bacon in your home? Emily McKenna, in an article in Eating Well magazine, has some very useful suggestions. She begins, "While I do not eat bacon often, I happily enjoy it every once in a while with a stack of pancakes or in a Cobb salad." Unfortunately, a recent study from the Harvard School of Public Health found that eating red meat can lead to increased risk of cancer and heart disease. Processed meats, such as bacon in particular, are called out in the study for their high levels of saturated fat, sodium, and nitrates. She continues, "While I won't be giving up bacon for good, sorry, Harvard, I will definitely be smarter about the ways I eat it. And here are some tips for healthier ways to cook with bacon that won't wreck your diet and are better for your health, heart health. Use sparingly. Since bacon packs a lot of flavor, I only add a little bit, about 2 ounces for every 4 people I'm feeding, to dishes that need something a little salty and smoky. A smidgen of bacon is a great addition to soups, stews, braises, and quick sauces. I typically add it right at the beginning of cooking along with my aromatic vegetables like onions, carrots, celery, and garlic. Another trick which is especially useful making meatloaf is to finely chop a moderate amount of bacon, again about 2 ounces for every 4 people, and knead it raw into the meat mix instead of covering the meatloaf with overlapping strips of bacon. Be sure to cook until crisp. Some folks like their bacon super crispy while others like it chewy. Going forward, remembering that crispy bacon is healthier than chewy bacon. Why? The more fat you cook out of each strip of bacon by rendering the fat slowly away with heat, the less fat you consume. Drain to remove the fat. Cool cooked bacon on a plate lined with fat-absorbing paper towels or flattened-out grocery bags. The more fat's absorbed by the towels or the paper, the less fat you will consume. Microwave your bacon instead of frying it. She said, "My mother never cooked bacon on the stovetop. Instead, she cooked it in a microwave using her bacon plate, a large square platter with deep grooves and well around the perimeter. It turns out she was onto something. The bacon rests on the grooves, which catches all the fat that drains from the bacon as it cooks. A bonus of this method is less mess to clean up. If you don't have one of those, just sandwich your bacon between layers of paper towels before microwaving. In my home, we have one of those special plates, and we cook our bacon as Miss McKenna suggests. A fairly new way to purchase bacon is already cooked. A package of this bacon may weigh as little over 2 ounces, but equal in slices to a pound of raw bacon. A few slices of this bacon can be heated in the microwave and be ready in a very short time. If anyone wishes, they can heat it further to make it even crispier. I, like Miss McKenna, use bacon just on occasion and really enjoy it. Juicy burgers are an American favorite. There are many ways that we can give them a special flavor. A burger can have a barbecue flavor by mixing in some barbecue sauce before you cook them. Some people prefer to use steak sauce or Worcestershire sauce for added flavor. I know of others who add finely chopped onion and or even green pepper before they are cooked. Adding these extras help make these low-fat burgers moister. Ground buffalo meat is now available in most supermarkets. It has a real beef flavor and makes a great burger. If it's not available, look for grass-fed or very lean ground beef, and when shaping the burgers, handle them lightly. Don't squeeze or compact them. When cooking, don't press them with a spatula. If you do, you're eliminating the moistness of your burger. If we don't want to heat up the grill and mess with charcoal, we have a George Foreman grill that produces a great juicy burger. People have eaten ground beef for centuries, but a little more than 100 years ago, someone in America came up with the idea of forming it into a patty and putting it between two slices of bread, turning it into a hands-on meal, no utensils required. Who did it first? It might have been the Menchie's brothers, who supposedly ran out of pork patties at an 1885 Erie County Fair in western New York and substituted beef. In Wisconsin, they say it was Charles Nagrin who decided to flatten a meatball and put it on bread at the Outagamie County Fair that same year. Fletcher Davis of Athens, Texas, is said to have made a splash at the St. Louis World's Fair of 1904 by serving ground beef on bread. But one favorite explanation, like because you still can go to the place and taste it, revolves around what is a brick shack in New Haven, Connecticut, called Lewis's Lunch. Back in 1900, food vendor Lewis Lassen, being a thrifty gentleman, made use of leftover steak trimmings by forming them into beef patties, which he then cooked and put between slices of toast. Lewis's Lunch still uses toast to sandwich its big, pillowy burgers. Sliced tomato, sliced onion, and cheese spread are available as garnishes, but don't ask for ketchup. Lewis Larson didn't offer it, and his grandchildren don't either. Along with hamburgers, another summertime favorite is a hot dog. Look at the section of a supermarket meat department that contains wieners, frankfurters, or hot dogs, all names basically for the same item. One version of this sausage in a roll is called a chili dog. Historians have a hard time pinpointing the birthday of the hot dog. Coney Island figures among the possibilities. Determining the chili dog's origin is just as tricky, but a prominent theory traces it to northern New Jersey about 1920, when a customer at John Patrice's hot dog stand in Paterson, New Jersey, reported bought his own cup of chili to use as a dressing for his hot dogs. Patritas took the idea and ran with it, preparing a meaty, beanless batch and dubbed his chili-topped dogs a Texas wiener. The idea spread to southeastern New York and western Connecticut, where today chili dogs are known as Texas hots. They're often split, grilled, and served on buns toasted on a griddle. Every part of the country has its own version, including bacon-wrapped Sonora hot dogs in Tucson, Arizona, Coney Islands in Detroit, unavailable in Coney Island, slaw-topped chili dogs in West Virginia, and upside-down dogs, a chili under the Frank in Mobile, Alabama. And I'd like to have a chili dog right now. Another of those born in the USA foods is granola. Granola was created during the Civil War by nutrition crusader James Caleb Jackson, who baked sheets of moistened whole wheat flour, crumbled them into bits, then baked them again, creating hard little nuggets that he'd called granula. Cereal man John Harvey Kellogg added cornmeal and oats to the formula and began marketing his own granula. When threatened by legal action, Kellogg changed the name of his product to granola. Though soon eclipsed by the likes of Corn Flakes and Rice Krispies, it came back as hippie health food in the 1960s. Today, granola is a breakfast staple. Some version of granola is used by hikers, backpackers, and those who enjoy camping out. In this country, we are blessed with people who try to figure out new ways to reach their goals. For some people, the problem with farmers' markets is getting there. With working parents with kids, it's hard to get to the market. It becomes a special event, said Guinevere Abernathy, a former real estate development executive in Durham. We wondered, so how can we put local grown food in front of people? So Abernathy created a Lomo Market, the Triangle's first mobile farmers market. It launched May 3rd and now has 9 weekly stops, including early evenings in several Durham neighborhoods and midday at a Chapel Hill Wellness Center and a Raleigh office park. A white pickup truck pulls a trailer with insides that resemble the produce aisles at Whole Foods. Bags of peaches and baskets overflowing with kale, leeks, and cucumbers, each festooned with a small sign naming the farm and where it was grown. Beyond fresh produce, there's a freezer case filled with bacon, chicken breast, and Italian sausage, all from North Carolina farms. In the refrigerated case are local eggs from Lattice Egg Ranch, cheese from Elodie Farms, and prepared food from the Triangle Raw Foodists. There's even a rack holding baked goods from Scratch Bakery in Durham and bags of North Carolina wheat flour and cornmeal. Prices are comparable to what you pay at a smaller farmer's market such as Carrboro or Durham. Abernathy, a founder of Green Fire Development and a business consultant, became enamored with the local food scene and decided to help farmers get their food to the market in a way that's more convenient for consumers. When they started in May, they had 5 stops. Then Abernathy ran an online campaign in which public nominated and voted for where they'd like to have future stops. People could even vote with their dollars, pledging money to be redeemed for purchases at the mobile market if their favorite stop became a reality. Ms. Abernathy says they will launch a 3rd campaign seeking nominations and votes for additional stops soon. Recently set up for the first time in the back parking lot of Seaboard Station, a retail development near downtown Raleigh. Before they opened at 6 p.m., 2 women pulled up ready to shop. "Are you guys open yet?" Kara Curtis asked. "Not yet," was the answer. "We've got to get a computer set up to take credit card payments." While waiting, Curtis explained that she had recently mused to a friend about wanting a more convenient way to buy local food. She recalled, saying, "Wouldn't it be great if they could come around the neighborhood like an ice cream truck?" While that's not exactly Lomo's market model, Curtis was excited when she saw a note about the Lomo market on her Mordecai neighborhood listserv the other day. She immediately pledged to spend $25 at the market if the Seaboard Station location was selected for Curtis' stop as the way home from her Capitol Boulevard office. Other shoppers also were lured by the convenient time and location. Sandy Scherer, who lives in the Oakwood neighborhood, also stopped to shop. "It's just very convenient, and I like to be able to support local farmers and know where our food doesn't come from halfway around the world." And we thank Angela Weigel, the food editor of the News and Observer, for this interesting story. As we face the warmest part of the year, we're faced with what to do to maintain good health at this time. High temperature and humidity can stress your body and increase your risk of health, heat-related sickness, including cramping, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke. Stay well hydrated is one important way of protecting yourself. The word hydration simply means drinking plenty of liquids. Most people meet their hydration needs from a combination of beverages and foods, and while it's hot outside or you are very physically active, you generally need more fluid than usual. You can usually let thirst be your guide. The National Academy of Sciences in 2004 reported that women who are well hydrated take in about 11 cups of water each day from all sources. Men get about 16 cups. No counting is required. In addition to plain water, other sources of fluid include coffee, tea, soft drinks, fruit juice, milk, smoothies, any drinkables. The diuretic effect of caffeine contained in drinks is more than offset by the amount of water in those drinks. Soup, frozen fruit juice bars, sorbet, and ice cream are also mostly water. You probably didn't think of many solid foods as being rich sources of water, but they are. Good examples include fruits and vegetables such as watermelon, cantaloupe, cucumbers, bell peppers, tomatoes, zucchini, squash, and lettuce. So it's no wonder during the hottest month of the year, moisture-rich foods like salads, cold soup, and tomato sandwiches sound the most appealing. And since these foods are high in water content, they tend to be relatively light, lower in calories, and easier to digest. In fact, one potential pitfall of pushing fluids during summer is the number of calories we can consume from sweet tea, fruit juice, lemonade, and regular soft drinks. Research has demonstrated that calories from foods we drink instead of chew don't seem to register with our brains as having been consumed. In other words, if we take in 500 calories in beverages, we're not likely to cut back on the number of calories from solid foods. That can wreck your weight control efforts, and that's why it's especially important to make the most of your beverage choices calorie-free. Be smart and stay hydrated this summer. The 30% of adults who routinely sleep less than 6 hours a night are four times more likely to suffer a stroke, a new study finds. The findings are the first to link insufficient sleep to stroke, and they're also the first to apply to adults who have kept off extra pounds and have no other risk factors for stroke, said Megan Reuter, the lead author of the report. It was presented recently at the 26th annual meeting of the Associated Professional Sleep Societies in Boston. People know how important diet and exercise are in preventing strokes, said Reuter of the University of Alabama in Burlington. The public's less aware of the impact of insufficient amounts of sleep. Sleep is important. The body is stressed when it doesn't get the right amount. The number of people who reported 8 hours or more of sleep a night was dropped from 38% in 2001 to 28%, says the National Sleep Foundation. A government study in May found 30% of working adults get 6 hours or less. Experts recommend 7 to 9. Previous research has shown that partial sleep deprivation leads to a modest increase in risk for cardiovascular events such as heart attacks. But the new study focuses on people of normal weight, said Rena Pandey, a cardiologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. This makes you scratch your head and say it's not just a known factor, she said. Less sleep is clearly linked to many harmful changes in the cardiovascular system. The three-year study of 566 adults found that the stroke risk was four times higher with less than 6 hours sleep a night versus 7 to 8. That applied to those whose body mass index, referred to the BMI, a number based on height and weight, was normal and was a low risk for sleep apnea. The sleep study participants had no history of stroke, symptoms were not at high risk, and self-reported sleep duration in tiny stroke symptoms at 6 months intervals. Smoking, being overweight, and inactivity were key risk factors. Until next month at this time, this has been Bob Kruger with the July 2012 edition of Thought for Food.